Hello, viewers and listeners, and welcome back to the Arizona T-Backs podcast, Arizona's number one baseball and beverage podcast. I am your host, Benji, aka GB Diamondback, as always, back to tell you all about the week's action with the Arizona Diamondbacks. And this week, no cup of tea, but instead I'm back with a piping hot cup of I Told You So and In Your Face, as we're going to be reviewing the series against Detroit and the destruction of the Los Angeles Dodgers. So let's go ahead and get right into it. A bit of a recap of, firstly, the Detroit series. Not a huge amount to talk about there. No big headlines that you'd say, yeah, here's your talking point. It's a bit of a mixed bag. Game one was apocalyptically bad. It was 13-0. Diamondbacks got shut out as Tarik Skubal pitched a pretty impressive game for the Tigers. There's no real confidence at all just throughout the team. And, you know, that Tigers team was a darn sight better than us. Game two was 6-4 win. Tight deal. And I think it was Ryan Thompson pitching, our Submariner, who earned the win there. And Paul Sewald came in and got back into it with the save. So Sewald really just delivering exactly what we'd expect from him when he's coming into games and that there's a lead. Paul Sewald's the guy who's coming in and getting it. But then the real talking point from this week has been the three-game series against the Dodgers. It's absolutely fantastic news to wake up to if you've been checking in on the scores from, you know, British time like I have. Game one was a 4-6 loss. The Diamondbacks managed to give up all six runs in the third inning and didn't really look like they were going to recover. It was a bit of a pitching experiment with Joe Manaply coming in as the opener. Slade Ciccone came in, pitched twice through the order, and then Bryce Jarvis was coming in as the closer there. A bit of a pitch experiment. Didn't really work. It was Ciccone who gave up all six of those runs, and though he's looked absolutely electric first time through the order so far in his Diamondbacks career, that didn't really come off if you bring in Joe Manaply, the lefty, to be your opener, which was an issue that maybe we faced a little more last year with our pitching of reluctance to bring in an opener, and as such, especially our kind of third and fourth choice starting pitchers were giving up a lot in the first inning, so trying to negate what clearly the pitching staff saw as an obvious weakness in the Diamondbacks pitching run up there by using Joe Manaply for the first inning. Didn't really come off, but yeah, that the loss was all Slade Ciccone on that one, despite the fact that he's been pretty good first time facing every batter he's faced this year. Did a solid job otherwise. Bryce Jarvis was okay. I mean, he's a guy that I don't know if I have a huge amount of confidence in, but, you know, he did a job. So we'll give him the pass on that one. Game two is where things started to turn around a bit. It was a 3-7 win. For the kind of recap, Brandon Fart was the starting pitcher, and it ended up being, for the Dodgers, kind of Shohei Ohtani versus the D-backs. It was a rare kind of off day for Betts and Freeman and co. Ohtani had four at-bats, two runs, two hits, and one RBI, which was pretty much everything the Dodgers did in that 3-7 win. Corbin and Cattell both starting to wake up there, but the player of the game, Jock Peterson for the Diamondbacks, two hits, three BBI, one home run, and he's player of the game. He's been one of the kind of underrated heroes of the month on MLB.com, if you've been checking in on the news there. Who else was good? Kevin Newman, I found, was really impressive. Who'd have thought he'd be a guy that we'd be looking at and saying, yeah, I think he sort of owns his spot in the lineup now. Start of the year with Geraldo Perdomo at shortstop with their meniscus tear, and you're thinking, yeah, what's going to be the solution there? I mean, Blaze Alexander, he's somebody who's come in. He's a kind of a platoon guy for the D-backs now. Everyone's excited about him as like potentially having a good rookie season. Jordan Lawler, of course, is still in the organization, but hasn't really got much game time, much spotlight attention beyond, you know, the hype that he received before the season started. But Kevin Newman came in, did a really good job. And if you look at some of our back end pickups this year, it's Kevin Newman, Randall Grichuk, and Tucker Barnhart. And I think Newman so far has been the most impressive out of those guys. Barnhart's played more games than I think most of us expected to see there in terms of being back up to Gabby Moreno at catcher. I'm not entirely sure Barnhart's going to be the long-term solution to our number two catching spot. With the news that Seattle Mariners are potentially looking to trade Harry Ford, the British prospect, I'd like to see the Diamondbacks all over that one. Maybe he could be the number two to Gabby. He's got kind of better slugging statistics than Gabby. Batting profile is the same. He gets good contact. He's not the tallest. He's not the strongest, but he gets good contact. Covers around the zone really, really well. Good pop-ups, trying to catch runners stealing. And I think having a number two like that under Gabby could be something we really should be looking at. But then let's talk back to game two before I get too off topic about how the D-backs' path to success is just getting all the British players. We already gave up Jazz Chisholm. Well, let's not talk there. Brandon Fart was pitching, starting pitcher for game two for the Diamondbacks. The young guy, it was his seventh straight start where he allowed 3 ER or less. And I think that's going to kind of speak for himself. He's another one of those guys who's been really quite consistently delivering. Okay, he'll give up, you know, silly home runs in random places and just sort of think, well, where the hell did that come from? But that happens with a lot of pitchers. As we'll talk about in a minute, Diamondbacks were on that in game three against the Dodgers, and that was against Tyler Glasnow. So I think Brandon Fart's, you gotta say, he did a good job. He's had 43.1 innings pitched in 2024. He's got 41 Ks with a 3.8 ERA, which, you know, is some pretty solid numbers when you think about it. And I remember at the start of the year, if you follow certain Diamondbacks pages on Instagram, especially pages that post lots of D-backs hot takes, there was somebody on there who said Brandon Fart will be fighting for the aces spot at the Diamondbacks by the start of this year. And lots of people actually were really piling onto the guy who did this take, and I'd say probably fairly, in the sense that, like, you look at the Diamondbacks pitching rotation just after we'd signed Erod and you thought, wow, well, he's got probably three guys to get through there. I think Jordan Montgomery came in as well, and suddenly that's four guys. I mean, like, Brandon Fart, you know, probably one of the best number five spot in the rotation guys in the MLB. Like, you'd love to have him as your, you know, theoretically what's supposed to be your worst starting pitcher. If that's Brandon Fart, then you're in a good position to, you know, make a push for the postseason. But, you know, he's kind of our number two guy now. If you look at Zach Gallen as sort of the undisputed number two, Merrill Kelly's out injured now, Erod's still out injured. So it's sort of between Brandon Fart and Jordan Montgomery for the number two of, like, who's going to be where. Troy Lovello came out this week and he said that when Erod comes back, Montgomery will still be ahead of Erod in the rotation. So I think there's a lot of confidence in Jordan Montgomery. He's pitched pretty well so far. But Brandon Fart, you know, if he's just sucking around as the number five guy, I don't think he's going to be particularly happy with that, although I'm sure he'll be fine as long as he's playing well. He'll be the number four guy with Erod coming back in, if Erod, you know, comes back in and pitches like we know he can, like he did at Detroit. Brandon Fart's, you know, he deserves to be higher up in our rotation, and I think if he keeps pitching the way he has been this year, he'll get there. He was the guy who was like the absolute hero of the NLCS. He kind of caught six straight in his start against the Phillies, and I think that's kind of set his stock quite high, and a lot of people expected him to really kick on this year, and it looks like he's making those strides. So one to watch for the rest of the series, and especially with some teams coming up where you can expect, you know, pitchers to do well. We've got the Rangers coming up, which will be a good challenge, a kind of rematch from the World Series. We've got Miami. It's in 2 days' time in the middle of the night if you're watching it UK time. Single game just on the calendar there. So yeah, Brandon Fart, expect to see some more out of him pretty soon. Especially with Merrill Kelly out injured, Jordan Montgomery still always an injury risk with a veteran pitcher. He's had some struggles with that this year. Lord knows what would happen if we lost Zach Gallen to injury as well. I think we'd have to start, you know, signing pitches just out of the crowd. Like, hey, do you know how to throw a baseball? All right, you're playing. But we'll have to see how we go. You had the Josh Rojas experiment pitching towards the latter half of, you know, 2022. So maybe this would go get him back from the Mariners. You know, say, hey, last time we got a player from the Mariners, it was Paul Sewald, and he's a pitcher. All right, you're doing that too. I'm sure Josh Rojas would do a job, but potentially not a very good one. And we're obviously not going to start going over, you know, the fun guys like your oldest Chapman's or your Devin Williams's. So, yeah. Brandon Pfaadt, one to watch. All right, let's talk game three against the Dodgers. An emphatic shutdown on a pitching job from Ryan Nelson, which was not something I was expecting to say at all at the start of this year. Ryan Nelson went up against Tyler Glasnow and earned the win. So that brings Ryan Nelson to 3-3 for the year with a 6.03 ERA in that one against Tyler Glasnow, who's 6-3 with a 3.09 ERA. And the way the scoring worked out, D-backs jumped all over it in the fifth inning, got three there, one in the sixth, two in the eighth, and that set it out as a 6-0 win and 9 hits throughout the game. As opposed to the Dodgers, who got 6 hits throughout the game, but no runs, which is good. It was a really impressive job to escape the jams that the Diamondbacks pitching staff kind of got them into on this one. 6 hits on no runs, especially off of Ryan Nelson and Bryce Jarvis, both of whom were the people who were pulling that out of the stocks, was the way to do it. So it was 18 on base for the Diamondbacks, and that was, you know, a good point on that. 6 LOB versus 8 with the Dodgers, and 1 error for the Dodgers, known for the Diamondbacks. Kind of the key moments there, got to go around, starting bottom of the 4th with 0-0, 1 out. Gavin Lux doubles on a line drive to Randall Grichuk, and Teoscar Hernandez gets to 3rd. And that bumped up the LAD win probability to 10.3% to 66.5%. So you've got to say, you know, the momentum was initially with them, and the D-backs kind of kept them in check. And then it started to get really interesting. Corbin Carroll woke up in the morning and smelled the coffee. He smoked a triple to left field for 2 runs batted in. Absolutely smashing hit from Corbin Carroll. And he absolutely tore around the bases to get into 3rd there. It's the sort of thing where you've got somebody like Gabby Moreno, Ketel Marte. That's an easy double. Corbin made that a triple. Marte smacked his home run, and that raised his hitting streak to 21 games with 0.270 as his hitting percentage in the last few games. Christian Walker homered again. That's 14 straight games he's hit a home run at Dodger Stadium, and that raises him up to 10 for the season. And the D-backs recorded their first series win in LA since April 2018, and that's not counting, of course, wins at Chase Field, which would include the championship series last year, which brings D-backs records now 24-26. And I think one of the things to really talk about here, I said I would talk about it, is the fact that we got that win off of Tyler Glasnow, and that's in itself a pretty solid, impressive statistic for the D-backs to have pulled off. I wouldn't say he's like the definitive ace at LA, because, you know, I love rating the Japanese pitchers from the MPB. It's like Yoshinobu Yamamoto, supposedly he's worth $200 million, so I think you have to call him like one of the aces over there in the Dodgers Stadium. But recording, you know, those three runs in the fifth and another run in the sixth, you know, we got towards that bottom of the order, and then, you know, he started reeling it off. You know, Older comes around again after Glasnow had sorted out the first 4 innings, and you think, oh yeah, well, you know, pitcher's duel it is. And then all of a sudden the bats just absolutely woke up. Corbin is absolutely smoking them. Kevin Newman singled on a line drive center field. Gabby Moreno to 3rd, Kevin Newman to 2nd. It's 0-1, 1 out on top of the 5th. And Corbin Carroll hits the triple, line drive to right. Moreno and Newman scored there, which made it 2-0. And then bottom of the 5th, you've got Freddie Freeman strikes out swinging on 2 outs. That takes the win probability for Los Angeles down to 17%. And then Christian Walker's hitting his home run top of the sixth, oh, that's a fly ball right out to center field, which brought the Arizona win probability to 92.6% at the top of the sixth inning. So if you're going to hold that one in there, that's good. And then, you know, you have to do the job right. You have to do your defending right. And bottom of the sixth, Andy Páez grounds into a double play with Cattell to third and then shortstop after that. And you, if you've seen the replay of that one, Ketel Marte was so switched on because he knew that he could basically get the force out there. So he waited. He could have caught that straight off for the single out. He waited for that ball to drop right in front of him, just in front of second base. Let it get on the ground, bounced into his glove, then stepped on the base and then threw to get the second out and make it a double play. And that there is baseball intelligence. And that's the thing that the D-backs maybe needed to work on, was the mental side of the game. Not necessarily always knowing what to do and when and knowing the theoreticals, but having the awareness of what's going on around the bases, what's going on around the diamond, switch the brain on and then make it happen. And that made your Dodgers win probability just 6.8% by the bottom of the sixth. You didn't get a key moment then until the top of the eighth, where Cattell homers on a fly ball to left field on a solo home run, pushed it up to 98% Arizona win probability. And that home run was a pretty smashing one as well. Yeah, the exit velocity was 110.3, went 390 feet with a launch angle of 24 degrees, which is, you know, just about doing enough to make it, you know, over the wall at Dodger Stadium. You don't need to go and try and do more than that. You just do what you know you can and make it happen. And I think that's really all it you needed it to be. So then you've got to talk about your news following this game. What does it mean? It's kind of frustrating if you're Tyler Glasnow. It's been a pretty tough 13 games or so for the Dodgers. And, you know, I think this sort of wraps that up as like a, hey, you know, we came, we kicked your teeth in, we left. I'll take that. You know, that's the D-backs that we like to see. You know, the rally backs, the answer backs, whatever you want to call them. We're a team that has to play baseball with, you know, realistically a lack of respect for whoever we're playing, because last year we were the underdogs. This year we're less son of that. People are expecting us to be able to go toe-to-toe with these teams, even though these teams spend so much more than us. Like, the Dodgers have spent $1 billion on this lineup, and it shows. They can absolutely crush teams when they want to. But we have to not be afraid of that. We have to go and say, yeah, we're going to leave you with a bloody nose, and we're going to take our first series win at Dodger Stadium since April 2018, despite the fact that we are now down with three starters, three of our starting pitchers are out, like I mentioned. Merrill Kelly's out, Erod's out, Ciccone's just been sent down, even though he was a guy that they thought, you know, he might be the solution to some of our injury woes. So, who is going to be stepping up to the mound, not to the plate in this case? It's stepping to the mound because we're talking about pitchers. Ryan Nelson, obviously the option there, had the win against the Dodgers. His pitching breakdown was actually really interesting. If you're looking at what he's been throwing there, you got to go versus righties. He's got the four-seam fastball, the cutter, the changeup, the slider, and the curveball. He really goes a lot with that cutter, changeup, and then fastball combination. But his slider is actually pretty good for a young pitcher. Who's he going up against for those spots that he's going to need? It's Tommy Henry is one. He's been up and down, up and down, up and down quite a lot. Between Diamondbacks and then AAA in Reno, he's done okay in Reno when he has been there. But, you know, AAA, especially with a smaller ballpark versus, you know, Chase Field, especially when it's hot, that's a very different atmosphere to pitch in. And then you got Blake Walston, who I don't know too much about. He's the young guy in our system, and we're thinking he's the guy who's going to have to step up fast, but he's going to earn his shot. And when he gets his shot, a lot of people are saying they think he'll take it. So I'm excited to see what comes of that. But, you know, that's your news roundup for the week. Diamondbacks doing the best of what they can with what they have, which is not what we thought they would have at the start of the season. I think it's four weeks is the ETA on Erod being back. I can't wait to see him in a Diamondbacks jersey, because that's the thing that, start of the year, I was talking to Rich over at the British Baseball Federation. The very same day we were talking, and that was the signing we made. And I thought, yeah, you know what? I'm okay to introduce myself as a Diamondbacks fan, because we mean business. And that is the signing that I thought would be in the mix there. losing them to injury so quickly, along with, you know, a guy I like Geraldo Perdomo. Perdomo is clutch in the sense that he doesn't really slug, he doesn't really slap hit. He just walks a lot. He manages to get on base a lot. He makes the defensive plays at shortstop that, you know, some of these elite guys do. He's not as tall as, like, Yureli De La Cruz is, so maybe you don't have to worry too much about the ball slipping under him. His diving plays are pretty quick. He sorts it out in that kind of center left area, and he gets a lot of those pop ups as well in the infield fly rule. That's sort of what he's there to do. So we're going to have to see what this team is capable of if we ever get a 100% fit 40-man roster that's, you know, the number one guy in each position. Healthy competition for each position is good, of course, but you look at Eugenio Suarez, he was kind of looking at maybe Yaimer Candelario would be the guy who would come in and be that spot, or whether or not you'd go and be getting guys from over at the Giants to be kind of that DH third baseman thing. But, you know, Jock Peterson and Eugenio Suarez are the combo we want there now. So they don't seem 100% all the time, though. Like, Jock can swing out and strike out swinging really quickly sometimes. You think, well, what the heck happened there? Whereas Eugenio Suarez, I still don't think we've seen the best of him in the Diamondbacks jersey yet. He got really good reception a few weeks ago when we went up against the Mariners. Of course, he's an ex-Mariner himself. Same goes for Paul Sewald, and that was good to see. But, you know, a guy doesn't get that kind of reception returning to a ballpark for a different team unless, you know, they're a really good player and they've really performed well. We haven't seen that Eugenio Suarez yet. We've seen some good hitting from him. He's hit some absolute bombs out in Chase Field. We haven't seen enough of him to really say, yeah, he's the same guy. We've got to be looking at, you know, 20, 30 home runs for the season to start thinking about, yeah, this is the guy we expected to see when we signed him as that big power bat in the lineup to take some of the weight off Christian Walker. But the fact that these guys are in the lineup at all, you've seen the change with Christian Walker, that he's hitting well, you know, and he capped that off at Dodger Stadium in Game 3 to win us the series, along with, of course, Ketel Marte, who, you know, extends his hitting streak. He's getting close now to getting close to the record. I think the longest hitting streak in Diamondback history is 30 or so, which was Gonzo in 2001, I believe. I could be mistaken on that. Don't check my math, but I think that's right. So, you know, 10 more games. Could Ketel get there? You've got to join us next time, where we're going to be previewing the London series along with some special guests next week, as London series time of recording is now only 2 weeks away. So I'm looking forward to seeing what all you guys think of that, as it'll be a rare video podcast as we get some guests on. We got Toria, also known as the GB Mets girl, and then we got our friends from over at UK Phillies joining us as well. So we'll see you for that episode. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll see you on the next one.